structure. The moon of Mars.
Of course I'm
going. Unspecified.
There's a monolith.
We've discovered a base on the backside of the moon. The scientist pulled out one of these mosaics and showed this base. Geometric shapes, there were towers, there were spherical buildings. There were very tall towers and things that looked somewhat like radar dishes.
Lieutenant.
But they were large structures.
We interrupt our program to bring you a special broadcast.
Welcome to the Zero Brain Podcast, kids. This is Dave Grave, and I'm finally back with a new episode. Sorry about the delay, guys. I don't know if you know how much effort goes into these fucking episodes. Half the time, they're monolithic. The other half the time, they just fucking materialize out of... They make themselves. Not every episode is that easy. Now, before we dive into the weird news, there's something I want to address. On the news recently, everybody's probably aware of this Asian hate bullshit that's going on. Now, I don't really get serious 100% on this show, but I'm dead fucking serious about this. I heard about a video that, like, a little tiny old Asian lady was accosted by a very large person. Stomped her fucking head in, beat the shit out of her, and a couple of grown-ass men watched it go down and closed their doors. Nobody helped that old lady. Nobody. Now, if you're listening to this show, I'm going to assume, hopefully, I'm right, that you're not a complete piece of shit. So, I'm encouraging all of you people out there. If you see anything like that take place, I don't give a fuck how big this person is. They go down. Okay? You call the fucking cops. You gather a bunch of people. You put a stop to that shit. Okay? Enough is enough. Now look, the authorities aren't going to do shit. The media, they're just going to make this shit worse. Okay? The only way this shit ends, any of the problems in our fucking society ends, is with you. Stop listening to the fucking media. They're jerk-offs. They don't know what the fuck they're talking about anyway. They're peddlers of sorrow. They're fucking ambulance chasers. If we actually had a caste system here in the United States, I guarantee reporters would be at the fucking bottom of it. Just like in ancient China, merchants were the lowest fucking class you could be. And reporters, they're worse than fucking lawyers. No, it starts with you people. You manage your behavior. Pay attention to what's going on around you and not what's being told to you. And if you see some fucked up shit happening, try and do something about it. And no, this isn't that nonsense you hear from the government. See something, say something. Fuck no. I'm not promoting a police state because I'm not a government that's conducted illegal fucking activities and now I'm paranoid that my constituents are going to hold me accountable. No, I'm not them. We have to take our society back. We can't rely on authorities because they've obviously proven they're fucking inept. Just look at Gavin Newsom. The guy's a jerk off. Look at Cuomo. But look, you need to fucking manage your own behavior and check motherfuckers around you, okay? We're only going to get through this together, us, grassroots. All right, in rant. Ironically, after just got done dogging all those fucking reporter dickheads, on to the news.
TheGuardian.com. Sperm whales in the 19th century were relaying information about whaling attacks to other whales. Whalers' logbooks show rapid drop in strike rate in North Pacific due to changes in cetacean behavior. A remarkable new study on how whales behaved when attacked by humans in the 19th century has fucking implications for the way they react to changes wreaked by humans in the 21st century. We consistently forget how invasive we are. We think we're fucking awesome. We're a bunch of jerk-offs. It's fucking whales telling other whales, "Hey, asshole, don't go over there. There's a jerk-off with a pointy stick who's gonna fuck you in the ass with it. Don't go over there." We think we're so smart. Oh, stupid whale. Oh, it's a surprise. And then we're surprised. This is how you know we're fucking stupid. We're shocked when we realize that we may potentially have devastating implications when we hunt certain whales to fucking extinction. Whales are smarter than you, because you didn't even know that they were talking until now. That was 100 fucking years ago. And these people are the researchers. These jerk-offs who pose these asinine questions. A question a fucking toddler can answer. Okay? It's a fucking cinch. If you fuck them up for hundreds of years, they're gonna know who you are. Yeah. They're gonna know who your ugly ass is. They did a study on crows. Crows can remember your ugly face. I bet you didn't know that. That's right. So the next time you go and try to throw some food at him that he don't fucking particularly like, that prick's gonna remember you. That's right. They'll attack you. They will remember your dumbass face, and they'll tell other crows, "Hey, you see that fucking jerk off over there? Yeah, we see that two-legged moron. Let's get him. You see Frank over there? Frank, he's all fucked up. He gave Frank some bum food, and Frank has had the shits all morning." That's right. "Hey, Frank, you doing all right?" He can't even ask me. Frank's too busy taking a fucking shit. You know how hard it is to fly and shit at the same time? Frank can't fly, okay? Fucking crows can remember your face. Whales can remember that you're an asshole in a boat. And they'll make fucking moves, okay? The paper published by the... I went on a fucking tangent there. Published by the Royal Society on Wednesday is authored by Hale Whitehead. Bunch of fucking people. And they ask this question. If whales are so smart, why did they hang around to be killed? I love that shit. You get a bunch of these douchebags that sit around and ask all these fucking smart-ass questions. "Oh, bro, if they're so fucking smart, bro, why did they hang around?" Well, they fucking didn't. No. Because while you're busy sitting here formulating a bunch of dumb-ass questions, these whales invented social media 150 years ago to avoid you and your ugly-ass fucking ancestors. All right, this one's awesome. CBS Sacramento. Man goes on rampage at Antelope Wingstop over botched fucking order. Apparently there's a cell phone video that shows a man losing his shit over his fucked up order. You can hear an employee tell the man, "It's either you get the food remade or you go on about your day." Wrong answer, dickhead. Look, how many fucking times do I have to school you people out there? If you work in customer service, it's not your fucking job to argue with these people. The guy doesn't want the wings, give him his fucking money back. Okay? Because look at you now. You're a fucking news article jerk-off. How much money do you get paid at Wingstop? Fucking minimum wage? And there's a photo of this guy, and he looks like the Undertaker. A customer in the store at the time recorded the man grabbing the register and slamming it to the ground twice before throwing it out the fucking window. Well, that's one way of getting your money back. Let's just take the entire fucking register with you. Guy said, "I was telling him to calm down. I said, you don't want to go to jail. You don't want to go to jail." Maybe he does, bro. Because anytime somebody grabs a fucking register and throws it out a window, there's no faster way to say, "Hey, cocksucker, take me to fucking jail. I can't wait to be incarcerated." Fucking idiot. And you know, when was the last time anybody ever said, "Calm down," and the shit worked? That's like throwing jet fuel on a fucking fire, you dickhead. Give the guy's fucking money back, you dickheads. Speaking of dickheads, Bill Gates. We love this guy. No, we don't. CNBC.com. Bill Gates says he'll fly a lot less and eat more synthetic meat to fight climate change. Thanks, Billy. You're a fucking real pal. Bill Gates said Friday that among the ways he aims to cut his carbon consumption is by flying less and eating synthetic meat more often. What a jerk off. You're talking about a guy, a billionaire. The residual effects of this guy's existence probably causes more carbon fucking pollution than you and me and your entire fucking city combined. This Microsoft co-founder has discussed his efforts to reduce climate change. Bill Gates just published a book about climate change. Really? The guy who wants to reduce his carbon footprint published a book, which required paper. So they had to cut down fucking trees to fucking publish a book about reducing your carbon footprint. I can't stand Bill Gates. Everything he says is just an angle. That's all it is. Next article. Because Bill Gates is a shithead. And let's leave it at that. DailyMail.com. So Joe Biden, he's like America's golden boy right now, right? Everybody loves him because he's old as shit and too fucking daft to fucking remember anything weird he says. So this old codger gets a fucking blank check for whenever he says something fucking weird. Apparently, he's also getting a blank check when he throws himself down flights of fucking steps, too. Yeah, so major U.S. press outlets have largely avoided mentioning this. As of Friday afternoon, the homepages of name any major news outlet had no mention of Biden fucking taking a Michael Jackson down a Pepsi staircase. Nope. Foreign outlets appeared far more interested. Absolutely. Anytime a foreign country has an opportunity to make Americans look like jerk-offs, they take it and run. And why shouldn't they? I mean, that could be a fucking industry for some of these people. If you have a low GDP, you should consider that business model. It's America. We're full of dumb motherfuckers. We'll keep you busy. That's fucking for sure. U.S. outlets including Drudge Report, TMZ, and Fox News broke the domestic blackout. Yep. The U.S. media, they blow Joe Biden's little fucking wang so hard. It's terrible, dude. I mean, we're supposed to have a non-biased media. But that's a fucking pile of shit. Anyway, moving on. Yeah, there's a photo. Fucking Joe Biden, basically fucking... I don't know if you guys have ever listened or watched Eddie Murphy Raw, but there's this bit where he talks about his aunt, Bunny, falling down the stairs, and he says it takes like 30 or 40 minutes. And that's what this fuck, his photograph of Biden falling down the fucking staircase makes me think of. Moving on, next article. Infowars.com. Because Alex Jones, love him or hate him, talks a lot of crazy shit. And unfortunately, more often than not, that fucker ends up becoming, he ends up being right. I know you guys are thinking, Dave, InfoWars, Alex Jones, you're out of your fucking mind. So is Alex Jones. Fuck both of you. Yeah, I don't blame you, bro. But according to InfoWars.com, researchers believe it's possible to become immortal. Yeah, that's right. And if you listen to Alex Jones long enough, he talks about how the elites, they want to fucking hit this singularity event horizon where they meld with machines and they transfer their fucking brains, or if not their consciousness, into a fucking robotic, cybernetic, biological avatar. It's basically like a combination of Avatar, Terminator, and the early Dune series books, where like with the Cymex, like Agamemnon, and Xerxes, and Ajax, and Juno, all these people. These were ancient humans who had their brains removed and put into fucking machines. And I'm not fucking kidding you. This was written fucking, dude, 20, 30 years ago. Back to the fucking article. Russian researchers Alexei Turchin and Maxim Chernyakov, who belong to the transhumanism movement. The roadmap to immortality involves the superintelligent AI systems powered by Dyson spheres as the primary technology might someday make resurrection possible. Turchin and Chernyakov wrote, "There is no evidence of an afterlife. But there's no proof that medical death is the end of subjective experience or that death is irreversible or immortality impossible." The paper, which Popular Mechanics first reported, is titled "Classification of Approaches to Technological Resurrection," which offers a roadmap to immortality. Yeah, that's where we're at, kids. We have a fucking bullet point fucking presentation. No shit. I swear it's a fucking flow chart. Alex Jones breaks down how the UN... they're setting a medical tyranny policy that gets around the checks and balances of a representative government forcing on its people. Death seems to be a permanent event, but there is no actual proof of its irreversibility. Really? They say, while no method is currently possible, many may become feasible with the future of technological development. That's all fucking speculation, Jerky. You don't know shit. You're jerking off. That's fucking bullshit. The fuck out of your next article. Uh-oh. Fuck it. We have sex robots again. Oh, here we go. So, fucking McMullen, that sex robot douchebag who was antagonizing that one, fucking the guy who doomed us all. Well, it gets worse. From thedailystar.com, incredible AI sex robot skeleton unveiled in step towards dolls walking unaided. Holy fuck. A real doll representative promised that the company is getting ever closer to developing a sex robot that can walk unaided, as well as conducting conversations with the fucking owner. Oh my god, fucking kill me now. Sex robot specialists. Are you fucking serious? That's a job? I don't know if I should make fun of that or apply. Like, what the... Real Doll has given fans a glimpse inside its Westworld-style factory with a picture of their AI Harmony model under construction and wearing safety goggles. The irony. Westworld was a futuristic dystopian robot brothel that went fucking crazy and all the robots ended up murking motherfuckers. A sex robot wearing safety goggles was really gross. Because my mind first, it goes somewhere else first, okay? I don't think of a sex robot being on the job wearing a fucking construction hat. I see a fucking sex robot wearing safety goggles. I'm thinking, who's shitting on that fucking robot? Great. The U.S. has secret evidence of UFOs breaking the fucking sound barrier. Mm-hmm. Without even a sonic boom. And performing moves that humans don't have the technology for. People think disclosure is going to be one thing. No, it ain't. Disclosure is going to take place over the course of an entire sequence of maybe 2 to 3 generations. You can't just drop a bombshell like that on one generation. Are you out of your fucking mind? People lose their shit. And I mean, think about it. You can't just tell people, hey, bro, there's fucking aliens. Yeah, there's aliens. Oh, yeah, they got all this crazy technology. We don't know. We can't stop them. If they came here and they wanted to fuck you in the ass right now, we couldn't do a fucking thing about it. Do you know how fast people would stop listening to you? That's right. They'd be like, well, you can't do shit. Why the fuck am I talking to you, jerk off? All right? I'm going to go talk to the aliens, okay? Because if they have the technology that if you tried to come over here and fuck me in the ass, they could do something about it. Fuck, get the fuck out of here. Yeah. Basically, what am I saying is that if you were a government and you tell people that there is an external threat that you have zero resources to counter... You are no longer a government. That's right. Now, from AssociatedPress.com, man accused of one murder says he really killed 16. Some people are so fucking stupid, it's staggering. You fucking idiot. So, I rarely talk about sports on this fucking channel. In fact, I don't think I talk about sports ever, but, look, most people talk shit about NASCAR, especially people in Europe. Like, oh, look at the stupid American. Oh, they're turning a left. They do the circle. And they're fucking hillbillies. Yeah, that's right. You have that correct. But you know what? This is one of the only sports where after the end of it, you can crash the fuck out of somebody at high speeds. These people are in rush hour traffic conditions doing 200 goddamn miles an hour. And then when some shithead decides to crash you the fuck out of the race, well, you can proceed after the race to go fuck that dude up. And that's exactly what happened, because NASCAR's Xfinity Series event got intense on Saturday. Daniel Hemric and Noah Gragson got into a physical altercation. So basically these guys fucking tangled up their cars in pit row. And each driver took fucking issue with the other's antics, and after the race proceeded to fucking hand out the fucking punches by the baker's dozen. And it wasn't just the drivers themselves, like, it was the entire, that's what happened here, the entire fucking crews from both these teams just got and started punching faces. If you had a face and you were in that fucking vicinity, consider it fucking punched. This sport is awesome in an era of PC, sanitary, sterile, fucking censoring Dr. Seuss, it's nice to see that some people are keeping it real. Hemric explained his role in the drama, explaining the situation is pretty fucking simple. He says he punched a hole in the nose of our car. So I punched him in the fucking eye. We're even. And get this. This is why we're talking about this fucking story. On Monday, it was announced that the drivers will not be penalized for the incident. Which means you can go and punch someone the fuck out in NASCAR and not even get in trouble. Do you know if you did that as a normal human being, that is fucking, that's an assault. What? That's an assault charge? I think that's a fucking felony. This guy just walks over and just starts lighting this motherfucker up, dude. Nothing, dude. Not even a slap on the wrist. Hey, hey, you two break it up. Nothing, dude. They just let him fucking duke it out, and that was the end of it. Could you imagine the kind of pressure those guys are under, though? I mean, would you expect anything less?
Oh, hey, bro, let's sit down and have a casual discussion about how you fucking crashed your fucking car to me.
No, fuck no. These guys have a fuckload of pressure, and they need to win. What did you expect? A fucking strongly worded tweet? Fuck no. Fists. You're lucky he didn't take a fucking chair to your or a fucking socket wrench to your fucking 80s mullet, dude. He'd knock you the fuck out. DARPA tests artificial intelligent dogfighting in 2-versus-1 simulations. Basically, there's a Air Combat Evolution program testing team dogfighting between artificial intelligence-controlled fighters in a software simulation in February. Think of it. An entire squadron ran by one AI platform using all the jets simultaneously. Facebook is making a bracelet that lets you control computers with your tiny fucking brain. That's right. According to the MIT Technology Review, the device would let you interact with Facebook's incoming or upcoming augmented reality glasses just by thinking. It uses electromyography to interpret electrical activity from motor nerves as they send information from the brain to the hand. I'm telling you, dude, we're in the fucking... We're in the 21st century. Fucking Buck Rogers, asshole. Fucking space travel, bitch. Speaking of space travel, Mark Rubio. That's right. We all listen to what he has to say all the time, right? No, fuck no. But according to Mediate.com, Marco Rubio talks to TMZ about UFOs and the possibility of alien fucking life. Marco Rubio says there's stuff flying over military installations and we can't do a fucking thing about it. No shit, Mark. Where the fuck have you been? You're an idiot. We've all known this. This guy's just, he's late to the party. It's okay, Marco. Sit down, have some Oreos, get yourself some coffee, and shut the fuck up and pay attention. Take notes. He says he's worried about UFOs flying near United States military bases. And he says there's stuff flying over military installations, and nobody knows what it is and if it isn't ours. He says, adding to that, it's logical to want to identify these unidentified flying objects. It's common sense, right? Duh. Dude, are you fucking serious right now, bro? Like, do you not have History Channel? Have you not heard of MUFON? Where the fuck have you been? He says, I think the worry is that there's stuff flying over our facilities, and we don't know what they are, said the senator. You know what I mean? Yeah, I know what you mean, Jerkoff. But look at the numbers. It's always a military installation. There's never any lasting damage. It's always probing. It's always testing. It's almost like reconnaissance. If I was the U.S. military and I was developing badass technology that was super hush-hush, so fucking black fucking ops that not even Marco Rubio here can fucking hear about it, how would I know how good it is unless I tested it against the best shit that I currently publicly know everybody knows I have? It makes a lot of sense if you think about it in that aspect. Is it aliens? Why? Why the fuck would it be aliens, dude? That's so analog. Oh, we're gonna just hover over your fucking bases, bro! Really? And not blow it up? Are you serious? And not take advantage of it? I mean, you can bitch slap them any fucking time you want. You can shut down all our nukes and you don't fucking do anything. You don't ever fucking do anything. It's all a test. It's all military testing. That's just my opinion, though. Dave, I didn't realize this was going to be a news episode, you fucking idiot. That's okay, don't worry about it. All right, and that's the end of our epically long fucking weird news broadcast. Today we're going to be reading Somebody Else is on the Moon, Chapter 6. This is a book written by George Leonard, We've been reading it the last couple of episodes. If you want to download the PDF, fucking go right ahead. If you own the book, read along, motherfucker. And if you don't, you can just listen to me read it to you, because that's kind of the point of this fucking episode. Let's move on. All right, here we go. Without fucking further ado, stretch nuts. Chapter 6, Change on the Moon, Knocking Down the Ridges. The NASA scientist and I walked from the Space Science Data Center at Goddard to the library. He was going to introduce me to the system in which a few key words fed into a computer retrieved an entire bibliography. I wanted to learn more about the Mascons, those big masses of something beneath the dark maria on the moon. The masses which disconcerted the scientists and caused gravitational anomalies. He wanted to talk about this thing called the King Crater. Others have struggled with this King Crater, he remarked. Now, as we waited for the lunchtime traffic to stream towards the main gate, he said something to me. He says, it raises more questions than it really answers. The area is loaded with these mechanical rigs. I call them X-drones, I said. Almost 2 miles long. I was trying to shock him. His face was impassive. Apparently it didn't work. It's where so many craters are being sprayed out, I said. The word sprayed did it. He turned in surprise. So you've noticed the sprays. Some conjecture that they aren't sprays, but solids. It's occupied me day and night for weeks, I admitted. It's been discussed around NASA, he said. It was my turn to be surprised. I had not expected one of the NASA scientists to admit this, although an administrative official at NASA had told me of the attention that the sprays were getting, but when I pursued the subject, he showed me reticence and obviously wouldn't go any fucking further. We dropped the subject of spraying out of the craters. King Crater deserves a lot of study, he said, as we entered the library. There's quite a few different shots of it, as you must know, different days, different lighting, different aspects. I remember this conversation when I went to the next audiovisual shop at NASA to browse in the photo tubs. One of the problems in looking for particular pictures in the tubs is that the brief description you see is not always helpful or complete. Now, it might say upland regions, other side of the moon, Apollo 16 flight, and leave you hanging as to which crater or mountain range is represented. The backs of the photos, which usually have a more complete description, are hidden. The photos are back-to-back in celluloid enclosures. The only way to handle the problem was to get as many photos as possible, which were missing from my collection, and then examine them at my leisure. Now, I spent the better part of a day there, and the time was worth it. In the grab bag were two shots I had not previously recognized as being of the King Crater area. One was a bird's eye view, a very long distance shot, which I sent to a photographer's shop in downtown Washington to have blown up. It came back on a Friday, and the next morning I set all the associated photos out on a table and went to work. Saturday night, I was still at the table, under a strong light, and when I went to bed at 3:30, it was to lie with my eyes staring starkly at the ceiling, still seeing in my mind the fantastic sights scattered in that one area near King Crater. Now, throughout the course of this book, the author is going to refer to these things called plates. And the plates are the photographs. Okay? I've covered this in previous episodes, how to order these photographs, where to find them, how to go about it, and I'll talk about that later on in the episode again. We return to plates 10, 11, and 12. Now, there is a long ridge separating King Crater from this 100-kilometer crater with a smooth, quote-unquote, pond in it. The ridge forms the interior of the wall of King Crater and the long sloping rim of the other. Now, at the base of the ridge nearest the camera are some old friends as well as some new oddities. What entranced me was that now the oddities began to jibe together, to click, and sense began to emerge out of the struggle to find and understand their purpose, gouging out a mountain. With equipment ranging up to 40 times bigger than anything used on Earth, the occupants of the moon have set about pulverizing a mountain. If you can fucking believe that. The mountain is 3.6 miles high, and there is nothing comparable to this undertaking on Earth. It is though we tried to break up a large chunk of the Himalayas, and not in one indiscriminate swoop with nuclear energy blasts, but far more delicately, so that a concurrent purpose such as mining could be served. Now, there is an asterisk next to this, so to cover the asterisk, it says, elsewhere in this book is mentioned the fact that the reduction of 2.5 tons of iron ore will give off a ton of oxygen as a byproduct, and that this oxygen is enough to maintain one Earth person for 3 years. At this point, I should emphasize the possibility that the occupants of the moon are engaged in a continuous process of getting a specific gas or gases from rock, breccia, ore, etc., for maintaining their colony bases. When, therefore, I refer to mining in this and other chapters, the term includes as well as the search for and retrieval of gases for artificial atmosphere. All right, that's the asterisk, folks. Let's get back to this fucking book, okay? Plate 12, taken from an overhead position and closer to the ridge than the other photos, shows that huge scoops have been taken out of the ridge and sent crashing to the ground as rubble. Now, I think it's possible that these industrious workers on the moon use advanced techniques for slicing and cutting into mountains and crater rims. One example might be laser beams, like fucking Dr. Evil. Another could be small controlled explosions. Now, see, that's more up my fucking alley. You know, explosions. That shit's fucking awesome. Obscuring dust clouds to be forced artificially into action by insulting the surface of the moon in some way. It's an interesting word to use. Explosions or large-scale flailing might well constitute that insult. There's that word again. Regardless of the method used to soften up the breccia or slice into the mountain ridge, the end result activity seems to involve the use of extrones. If you don't know what extrones are, I covered them in previous chapters. I encourage you guys to go back and listen to some of those, and the author himself will discuss and cover that in greater detail. But just to cover it quickly, extrones are basically mining equipment that are fucking huge, and of course they're shaped like an X. Moving on. So regardless of the method used to soften up the breccia or slice into the mountain ridge, the end result activity seems to involve the use of extrones like we just talked about. Now, they perform, as we shall see, more than one function. Extrones with different attachments. Americans have the reputation for being the best engineers. Well, thanks. I don't know if the fucking Germans are going to agree with that, but thank you anyway. Now, Americans have the reputation for being the best engineers, although the Germans and Japanese are right up there, too. It's interesting I said that. Not scientists. Engineers. Okay, there's a big difference. It may surprise you to learn that the bulk of great scientific leaps ahead in the world can be attributed to people from other countries, example given, Europe and China, or to people who cut their teeth in foreign schools. If you doubt this, make a list of the biggest scientific breakthroughs you can name, and then consider who was responsible. Now, I think this is due to the American science training plants turning out people too strongly oriented towards success as opposed to intellectual curiosity. Naturally. If anybody's familiar with the work of fucking Graham Hancock, He has a bone to pick with all academic institutions here in the United States because of this exact problem. The American science training plants turning out people too strongly oriented towards success as opposed to intellectual curiosity. Too quick to take cheap shots at one another and at those who invade their domain. What are they saying here? People take cheap shots at one another to discredit other people's work and validate their own. and people don't like people staking claims on shit they're talking about or things that they're studying, because these people, these professors and these other people in academia, they make their lives off these cases. Some people make their entire careers off one archaeological find, and then if you get some fuckface coming in trying to fucking cramp your style, there goes your entire legacy, dude. Okay? So yeah, there's a lot of infighting. So here we are, with this great reputation for engineering, but the occupants of the moon can run rings around us in terms of engineering feats. For a case in point, look at the foot of the ridge in plate 12. There is a large X-drone there, one of the largest I've seen on the moon. It measures up at least a mile and a half, and probably more from tip to tip. And it looks like this. Take two sticks, break one in half, and lay the two broken halves on top of another stick. And that's what it looks like. Okay? Two fucking sticks, one broken, the broken one on top. In a cross, students of ancient legends and folklore, which lingered until the present century in parts of Europe, may see an interesting resemblance between a single leg of the X-drone and the worm or huge dragon which allegedly terrorized the countryside. See the writings of John Mitchell and F.W. Holliday. One leg of the X-drone is separated from the main body. At first, I thought there might have been an accident, but no. The leg fits into a socket. It has clearly been an intentional separation, as though to exchange one leg for another, which performs another function. Exchangeable parts on a rig 1.5 miles long. I don't know if anybody listening knows the value of interchangeable parts. Because in the early industrial era, you didn't have that. If a part broke, the entire machine was fucked. There was one dude, and I forget his name, he came up with the idea of replacement parts, and we haven't looked back since. But yes, there was a time, long ago, in the early industrial era, where if you had a part break on you, you manufactured it the best way you could on your own, or the entire machine was fucking scrapped. Moving on. Note the chains attached to the ends of the legs. There are two chains at the end of each leg. Note that the ends of the chains, the objects with high reflectivity. These small crosses, probably made of the hardest metal possible, act as maces. Kind of like a minesweeper. You watch those old World War II films where they have like a guy in a tank where it's got like a fucking flail on like what looks like a vacuum roller, and it's just fucking cruising through a field, blowing shit up as it hits these mines. I think that's what he's trying to convey there. These X-drones flail at ridges as well as spray out craters. We can speculate that they use the rock and breccia and ore, which they pulverize for building material inside the moon, extraction of metals, iron, titanium, uranium, etc., making an atmosphere such as oxygen from metals, rocks, or sand, or an as-yet unspecified purpose. Pipeline 0.2 of a mile in diameter. Coming straight out of the end of the ridge, out of a large dark depression, there is a pipe, which is between 2 and 3 miles long. That doesn't sound like a big deal, right? Because we have the pipelines and shit like that, you know, the oil pipelines. This is different. Now, to help you locate it, I've sketched it below. I'm sorry, I'm reading this for fucking verbatim here, so if you guys can't see what he's writing, it's because you don't have the book in front of you, you fucking weirdo. So do my best to articulate. There's a pipe sticking out of a mountain next to that broken-ass X-drone. There you have it. Several interesting features invite examination. The conduit, or pipe, has a double nozzle on the end, each nozzle, or spigot, having an identical hood. The end of the pipe is a bit lower than the part coming out of the mountain ridge. This would make possible for gravity flow. Notice that something is flowing in a steady stream out of one nozzle directly unto the end of one X-drone. Now, these are illustrations that the author, George Leonard, has done himself. And he has sourced these illustrations. The source of these illustrations are certain photographs he's taken from NASA. Obviously, and he's redrawn them in a blown up dynamic so he can convey what he thinks these fucking things are. That's what we're talking about here. Another possible function of X-drones is therefore suggested. One, allied to the spraying function. They sift or otherwise separate and treat materials fed into one end, while the chaff is sprayed out the other end. Kind of like a wood chipper, you know what I mean? Now, does the very size of this operation indicate a high degree of efficiency in mining? Well, I would have to say, yeah, it fucking would. A spare parts stand. Just in back of the large X-drone under discussion is a platform or stand of equivalent size. This illustrates what I meant when I said that the oddities would begin to click, to jibe together. What you see in this illustration here are long rods in a symmetrical arrangement, one with a metallic appearing cross at the end, the other with an interesting but unidentifiable object. The cross is the same size, is the same as those seen at the ends of the X-drones. The long rods are parallel bars with identically curved legs. They are raised on the rack or stand, perhaps because the falling dust could obscure an object lying on the ground. The object's proximity to the X-drone is also a tip-off, that its function is to supply the X-drone with extra parts. Kind of like a supply train. Not surprisingly, a similar spare parts stand can be seen in at least one other photo. One wonders how long ago in their history they made planned obsolescence obsolete. If you don't know what planned obsolescence is, a good idea of planned obsolescence is this. When you buy a new car and you get a warranty on it, they'll tell you for your drivetrain. Some of them are like 5 years, 100,000 miles. So they're anticipating that in about 100,000 miles, your drivetrain's going to take the shit. And that's planned. It's planned for a bunch of economical and business reasons. That's what planned obsolescence is, in case you didn't know. Spewing out a filament. An old friend shows up between the corner of the ridge and the small ponding effect, where the ridge ends, at the right of plate number 10. It was also in a photo taken by Matsui of Japan and reproduced as plate 8 in Moore's A Survey of the Moon. The object looks like an oversized cannon. In the Matsui picture, it is seen spewing a filament across an expansive crater, a very square crater, by the way, toward a similar object on the opposite rim. I was tempted to think of it then as some sort of extraterrestrial game. And the thought is still tempting. Nothing else, in Earth terms, at least, makes sense. But the earnest work going on elsewhere in that area sobered me, and I forgot the game hypothesis. The oversized cannon is beyond question one more functional rig in a complex series of steps undertaken by a complex culture. You supply a label, since I haven't enough evidence for an idea of what to call this or what its function may be. Here's what it looks like. It looks like a giant kukri blade. If any of you guys play like Assassin's Creed Syndicate, you guys know what a kukri blade is. It's a fucking badass knife, man. Fucking slice a motherfucking mullet clean off. That's right. It looks like just the blade, and instead of having a handle, it looks like a little spout attached to the end of it. And it's fucking huge, apparently. Now, back to the book. Another mystery. There is another kind of object in the King Crater area. It's a new one to me, which boggles the mind. It appears in plate 12 in at least two spaces. It is difficult to draw because of its unfamiliarity. That's interesting. Now, one cannot be sure if parts of something else are being included in the drawing or not. If enough cases of a phenomenon are seen, the essential characteristics become familiar and extraneous ones lose significance. It is seen most clearly just behind the object picking up sunlight at the foot of the ridge. And here is what it seems like to me. It appears to be a long arching cable with what looks like two bells attached to either end. And along the length of this cable, or whatever the fuck it is, it looks like a cable, is evenly spaced filaments that look like eyelashes. And just to the left of this arching bell cable eyelash fucking illustration is what appears to be a shaded area in a straight line off to the edge of the piece of paper. What? Just like the author said, like, what the fuck is that? I have no idea. I don't even know what I'm looking at. I'm just trying to describe this shit as best I can to you guys in case you don't have the book. No energy shortage on the moon. This last phenomenon concerns, I believe, power. In several places, this oblong object has been seen, always raised at the same angle, always with two knobs symmetrically located on top at either side, always with a cord or filament running from it. We have seen it connected to the super rig working on Crater Rim terraces. And plate 12 on the rough ground in front of the ridge, it looks like this. Which is basically like, think of a flat plate with two holes on one side, one at each corner. And it's being propped up by some type of apparatus, so it's at an angle, kind of like a ramp. And from one of the holes, which is elevated, there seems to be some type of cable or pipeline emanating from it. Electric power. Power stored and meted out and controlled through this object. Now, is this what runs these X-drones? Is this what maintains and furnishes a constant atmosphere with just the right constituent elements? This is speculation, admittedly. The only thing we can say with any assurance is this. The object is manufactured. For all we know, it could be a fast food emporium or a giant movie screen. He's taking the piss out of it. Now, there are a lot of unexplained things on the moon, the NASA scientist said. We're puzzled. No shit. I'd gone back to Goddard to get my bibliography from the library. As usual, I'd stopped at the guard office at the main entrance to get cleared to go in. NASA says it's an ordinary government agency without security, with a capital S, but you have to be invited by someone there if you are a private citizen. And it's amazing how many NASA employees have top security clearances. This isn't an open installation, the steely-eyed guard said. I had to get cleared by telephone, fill out a form, get a pass for my car, wear a big sign on my lapel, get a map with directions to the one building I was cleared to visit, and carry a piece of paper for the person I was visiting to okay. Ordinary government agency? But you have hypothesis, I said to the NASA scientist. For some. Suddenly he turned to me, and there was only the hint of a smile on his face. There are. Damn it, there are some things that you don't even try to communicate. Do you know what I mean? Even you see things you don't know how to discuss. What to say about them? They're too... It was the first time I'd examined this myself, and I knew he was right. There were things in King Crater and other places that I would not attempt to discuss. Everyone has a threshold beyond which he or she will not go. Some concepts are just too fucking wild, too far out, with no way of knowing whether they are seen correctly or not. I stuck to concepts as safe and conservative as I could when I wrote or talked about the moon. That tells you where the establishment stands. At any rate, the NASA scientist said, there are hypotheses. Some. Such as the occupation of the moon by space races, I said, trying to keep my voice matter of fact. Pause. That is not a viable hypothesis. You mean nobody thinks of that at all? Individually, maybe. Privately. Seldom. Out on the table. He thought for a moment. I thought about the word seldom. We reach out for a natural explanation, you know? No matter how unlikely a natural explanation is, always preferable to a scientist. And why on Earth, on the solar system, would any intelligent race want to be on the moon? That's the million-dollar question, Regis. I think they're taking uranium and titanium and iron, I said, picking three metals out of the hat because I knew they were there. Thorium, God knows what the fuck else. The scientist looked embarrassed. He had not admitted it. He had not admitted to the possibility of there being a they. And now he was invited to discuss the moon on that basis. Segments of the Apollo 17 preliminary science report ran through my mind. And it reads as such, all Mare basalts have been found to be unusually rich in iron and sometimes rich in titanium. The orbital gamma ray experiment results show that the region north and south of the crater Copernicus is remarkably rich in radioactive elements. A band going from north of the Fra Mauro site to west of the Apollo 15 site contains soil 20 times richer in uranium and thorium than either Mare or Terra in other parts of the moon. Perhaps the explanation is that the moon is richer than the Earth in the radioactive elements uranium and thorium, and that these elements are strongly concentrated in the upper parts of the moon. That's pretty interesting considering how fucking hard and how rare those types of materials are. Those come from dead stars and supernovas. You can only get those types of fucking materials from dead stars after they explode. But I guess that's fucking everything though, right? Back to the book, I did not pursue this theme. The NASA scientist changed the subject to the bibliographic search system at the library. Had I gotten what I wanted? Yes, I had. The people in the library were very helpful, very cooperative. We separated. Homeward bound, I contemplated the world as it seemed to me then. A schizophrenic world. A world Kafka might have invented. Unreal. A hot yellow sun, blazing in the North African desert, and some people were yelling it was raining out, and there was no sun at all. And pounding in the background were the words over and over, need to know, need to know, need to know. Off book for a minute. I'm going to apologize for this author, because as schizophrenic as the world is, he claims, his writing is the same. He fucking jumps around. So I apologize that this narrative seems to hop here and there. Moving on. I wondered where it would end. When you came right down to it, we didn't have to know much of anything, did we? I mean, we would eat and sleep and go to work like drones without knowing what was going on in the world and the universe, right? Wow. Wow is fucking right, Fluxstick. Now, to finish the chapter up, Morris K. Jessup, that mathematician astronomer who had been way ahead of the rest of us and died before his time, asked the question nearly 20 years ago. Who has beaten us to the moon, perhaps by hundreds or even thousands of years? And that, my friends, is the end of Chapter 6. Next episode, we're going to be talking about Chapter 7. It is going to be called Service Station in a Crater. All right, this has been the Zero Brain Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. I'm Dave Grave. Follow me on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all that social media shit. You know how to fucking do that shit. I mean, it's been around long enough. You people know the fucking drill probably better than I do. All right, now, I'll see you guys soon. And be good, all right? Don't be pricks. I'm serious. The world's been shitty enough for the last year and a half. All right, this is Dave Grave, Zero Brain Podcast, signing off. Peace.